97.1 FM Talk Podcast.
It is Second Amendment Radio and the Great Outdoors. Happy that you're with us this weekend. Mark Cox in here along with Bo Matthews and producer Carl Middleman.
Hi.
And this segment is brought to you by Razorback Armory. They are more than your typical firearms dealer. They are locally owned. They're specializing in a gun store and the knowledge center. They love talking about the world of firearms and happy to answer any questions you may have. But bring your wallet because chances are you're going to want to buy something. Go to RazorbackArmory.com. They are in DePere, so it's easily central. Located on Manchester Road, just east of 270.
Yeah, that is always a problem for me, too, when I walk into a gun store. There's always something that I want to buy, right? That and bourbon stores. Yeah. I have the same problem with bourbon stores.
Well, okay, so you got two of them taken care of, alcohol and tobacco. I'm sorry, alcohol and firearms.
Yeah,
the tobacco's the other one that's eluding you, I'm sure. So, yeah, we got a big show, and we appreciate you checking us out. We encourage you to share the show to anybody that is a Second Amendment supporter as well and loves the great outdoors. Now, we do have a lot of great outdoor stuff we're going to talk about, but the world is changing in the city of St. Louis, and Mark, you can attest to that.
I'm telling you.
With your coverage of Kim Gardner being out.
It was a shock. I think it was a shock to the governor. It was a shock to the attorney general. She abruptly resigned in the middle of the week, right? And they've acted pretty quick to fill the position, which is a good thing. But there were a couple of days there this week where police didn't know who to go to apply for a warrant. I mean, she left so abruptly, it was really kind of shocking. Bo, consider this in the attorney general's lawsuit against her, he put out facts like this. 9,000 cases dropped by her office in the brief period of time she was in charge of it, the brief few years. Another 2,700 cases were thrown out by judges for lack of evidence or not showing up or whatever the case may be. Think about that. Close to 12,000 cases of criminality not prosecuted. Now, not all of them were rapes and murders and shootings, but that is an abrupt turnaround. And just like if you have a child or a pet and there are no consequences for its actions, criminals react the same way. They now move about freely around the city because they're fairly confident, even if they get caught by police, they're not going to be held accountable for their actions. That's why we have such a problem in this city.
And look at the impact of the culture of downtown St. Louis in the city. It's almost frightening. I mean, it's not closed doors yet, but I mean, I was watching a ball game the other day, and I was like, wow, that's Busch Stadium. There's like, you know, half the crowd there. It was amazing to me because there were so many empty seats. Now, that could also be part of, you know, how they're playing this year, but if I talk to my neighbors, hey, you going to a Cardinals game? Nope, ain't dealing with it. Just because there's a risk factor. Obviously is a risk factor. And there's a good chance that if you were to be molested, accosted, mugged, whatever, nothing's going to happen anyway.
Well, here's the thing. I mean, the Cardinals are playing better. I think they will put butts in the seats to see this team if they continue to improve. I don't know how much crime plays a role in who does or doesn't go to the ball game, because every year the Cardinals seem to break records, or they're the team in the Major League Baseball that sells the most tickets.
They
and
get
all this
3
stuff.
Million every
yeah,
year.
Every year. But to your point, there was a shooting at a park near Forest Park this week. Kids running around playing on the playground, adults strolling around, walking their dogs, and it's somebody's Ring video camera. Channel 4 had the video. You can hear the pow, 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 pow. Somebody fired multiple shots from a gun of some sort. You can see people scurrying for safety in the park.
Sure.
It took 55 minutes to get a police officer to respond because they're so understaffed and they had so many other things to deal with. That's the reality these days. When we talk about learning how to protect yourself, you have to take responsibility for your safety, whether it's deciding to conceal carry or whatever the case may be. Because when you dial 911, depending on where you are, there's no guarantee of how long it's going to take a good guy with a gun to respond to protect you.
Sure. Right. And reaching back to what you did last week, was it a week ago you did the trauma training?
Yes.
So that means you have to, you know, make sure you are responsible for your own safety and your own medical care in a lot of cases. If something does happen and you need an ambulance, it ain't going to show up. Now, are we still having the dispatcher issue as far as they're not picking up, or did they revamp that?
They've worked that problem out, and then supposedly there's somebody there answering the phone, or you're not going into a voicemail system if you call. Right. They just don't have the manpower. So it starts with getting a new prosecutor in place. It starts with getting more police officers on the street who are the first responders who can then arrest the bad guys and pass them on to the circuit attorney's office, where hopefully they'll now start getting prosecuted.
Right, right. And this is why we stress training.
Yeah.
If you are a law-abiding citizen, or if you have a clean record and you've been, you know, contemplating that, that's why we talk about the range or Razorback Armory and you know, getting people to be able to protect themselves for something happening. And I think one of the biggest sectors of people that are purchasing firearms, if I'm correct, it's African-American women that are actually, there's a big bump in the fact that they want to protect themselves because they're seeing what's happened, or what's not happened actually, at the prosecuting attorney's office, which is frightening. It really is.
Well, it's something that it's going to take a while. Let's put it that way. Even if we put the teeth back into enforcing the laws in the city, this lawlessness will continue for a while, and you just got to move with your head on a swivel, so to speak.
You can't flip a switch, right? So I don't know if you do this, but you know, when you're bored and you can't find a program to watch, I'll reach back to a sitcom that I used to watch years ago, and what we've been watching lately is Night Court. Harry Stone.
Larroquette. He's on the new version.
Yeah, there's a new version.
He is. Different personality in the newer one. But anyway, they need to run courts 24 hours a day. Why not? We've got doctors that work 24 hours a day.
Yep. Good luck getting employees to do that. Speaking of shooting, you and I are involved in some shooting this weekend. First for the Chesterfield Chambers, we talked about. That'll be over by the time people hear this. So Eureka Chamber, I'm sorry. Yeah. There at Skeet and Trap down in Pacific. St. Louis Skeet and Trap. And then I'm going to get to go out to the Chad Hansen Memorial shoot, which is up in Old Monroe. I think it's Black Hawk Valley. On Saturday, and I think the weather's supposed to be great this weekend, so I'm really looking forward to that. You talk about challenging. I know you were supposed to get out and practice the other day, but you didn't make it, right?
No, it didn't happen because that club out there does like a Thursday night dinner and shoot 50 rounds, whatever. Mm-hmm. And again, I'm a newbie. I've shot skeet as much as I've golfed in my life, but it's so much fun because I'm anxious to be out there to get better, to figure out, you know, 1,200 feet per second, the shell shoots. Why can't I hit that thing right there? It's like, I know it's only, 4 inches in diameter?
Yeah.
Ugh, it eludes me.
It eludes people who are really good at shooting, generally speaking. That is a trick. He's talking about five-stand. They have a five-stand shoot that they do, and you go to five different positions. You shoot a variety of different birds, a couple of singles, a couple of pair, and then one where you shoot, and on the report of the gun, they fire the second bird that's coming from a different position. And at all five positions, those numbers change. So it may be 1 and 3 and 2 and 8, and one of them flies over your head from behind you, and it's truly a challenge, and it's something that makes you want to go out there and do it again and again and get better at it. So that's a good thing.
It's true. And don't shoot the house. Don't shoot the house where the birds are coming from. I did that, but I'm not the first one to do that.
I promise. Yeah, and skeet, you're more likely to do that in skeet or trap, I guess, than sporting clays for sure. But anyway, looking forward to a great weekend of outdoor Second Amendment activities, don't you think, Bo?
Absolutely. And the cool thing about that group is the culture. They're always welcoming newbies, and I'm a newbie.
Very true. Coming up, maybe it's shooting for you. For one author, it is golf, he said, that has saved his life. We're going to talk to author Drew Millard and find out what it is about that frustrating sport that he thinks has extended his lifespan. That's coming up on Second Amendment Radio and the Great Outdoors.
It's Second Amendment Radio in the Great Outdoors, and if that song doesn't bring back memories of an awesome, awesome movie, I don't know what will. I actually had an aunt that was kind of an extra in Caddyshack.
What?
Yeah,
really?
I didn't know it. Yeah, I didn't know it until like 10 years ago. Remember the boat scene where the boat crashes into the dock?
Yes.
She had to bring like several, she told me she had to bring several changes of clothes because they had to shoot that so many times. But yeah, claim to fame. Brush with greatness right there.
No kidding. Did she get to hang out with Bill Murray?
I didn't get any dirt on that.
That would have been a Ted Knight scene.
That's a good point.
But I bring that up, and Carl Middleman obviously playing that soundtrack from Caddyshack. There's a lot of great golf movies out there, and we are about ready to talk about golf and how golf can save your life. Seriously, throwing that that driver in the pond, that might help relieve some stress. Drew Millard, welcome to Second Amendment Radio on the Great Outdoors. Now the temperatures are up. We want to get outside and play some golf. How are you, sir?
I'm doing great. How are y'all doing?
Hey, we're doing great. Drew, you know, I joke oftentimes that I've got an appointment with Dr. Green. Is that how golf saves your life?
I mean, it's more of sort of like a holistic thing. Like, you know, if I got shot, I'm not trying to plug it up with a golf ball.
right.
But it's more of, you know, this is really a book about passion and obsession in a positive way, and how, you know, devoting yourself to something that is not necessarily like the main focus of your life and is in fact like, you know, ultimately pretty trivial can be a path towards becoming, you know, a better person and, you know, more focused and present in your life.
Okay, well, the title of the book is How Golf Can Save Your Life. Let's go back to the genesis of your golf life and how you came to be an author for this.
Yeah, so I grew up in Western North Carolina, which has, you know, just so many fantastic golf courses. I played when I was like in elementary, middle school, and high school. And then after college, I sort of let the game go because I was, you know, I was living in New York and then Los Angeles, which are not super easy places to, like, you know, have a bag of golf clubs in the trunk of your car, especially in New York where you don't really have cars.
Right.
And, you know, I was working in digital media at this company called Vice. And, you know, y'all are lucky in that, like, you know, you have this radio show and you have an audience. And the audience, you know, is very loyal and they will listen to y'all no matter what, even if you have me on. I don't know. I'm kidding. But and, you know, that just isn't the case in digital media, where basically every article you put out is competing against everything else on the internet. And so you have to work really hard. You have to put out a ton of stuff and you're always like basically like living for others, like working off of the feedback that you get from, you know, readers or on social media or whatever. And it is also an environment that really fosters burnout. And that definitely happened to me. And so when that happened, I was living in LA at the time. I had just left my job and was like freelancing, but I was like going to a rap concert at night where I was like reviewing it and then staying up until 4 writing the review and then having to wake up at like 8 a.m. to, you know, go report some other stuff. And I was just like, I can't do this anymore. My body is shutting down. I have to go back to Western North Carolina. And so from there, I was like, well, this is not ideal. This is suboptimal. I got to figure something out. And so I started going to therapy and started doing a lot of exercise. Except I hate exercise. And so I was like, well, what is exercise technically? And I realized, oh, I could do golf as long as I walk. And so I just sort of started playing again in 2016 or so as just to give me something to do, to get moving. But then, you know, once I started seeing Dr. Green and hit the ball flush a few times, it was like an addicting feeling. And then I sort of started putting, like reading all this deeper meaning into it. And yeah, that's how all of that happened.
Well, I think the advice fits a lot of different situations, right? I mean, Bo and I are going to be competing in a trap shooting competition this weekend, for example.
And, oh, wow.
I mean, if you find something like that you're passionate about, you don't have to be a scratch golfer or a scratch shooter for it to provide that therapy for you. I mean, you're always yearning to get better. You may or you may not. Maybe you go get some lessons and you get a little better at it. But if you could submerge yourself in something like that where you're around people who are like-minded, who enjoy the sport, whatever it is, the same, it does give you that whole feeling again, right?
Yes, absolutely. And I'm so happy that you picked up on that, because that's really what I want people to take from the book. Also, wait, so if you are shooting trap really well, is it called being a scratch shooter, or is that, or were you just making that comparison?
I'm just using the golf term for it. I guess I don't know. We'd call that certainly in golf, you could call it a ringer if you invited a ringer along to play on your foursome because they're really good. Maybe in shooting, you'd want to bring a ringer along. Bo and I will need a ringer this weekend.
Yeah, ain't that the truth? You know, and this show is called Second Amendment Radio in the Great Outdoors. Drew Millard, I have to tell you that people that are listening to this program right now, the golf portion is the Great Outdoors part of the show, that even people that have never golfed or are new to golf, or new to trap shooting, it's just good for the mind to be focused on something other than a stressful job or something like that. So even if you're a new golfer or you want to revisit it like you did, that's a good move, right?
Yeah, absolutely. And if you look at the numbers, basically when the pandemic first hit and everything was shut down, one of the few exceptions was actually public golf courses. And so you had a huge influx of people to the game, and they have largely stuck around. Like, if you look at the numbers in 2019, from 2019 to 2022, I think there were 2 million new golfers.
Wow.
Or people who had, like, gotten really into it. And, you know, that's like a 33% increase. And that influx has really reshaped the game from the bottom up in this really cool and interesting way. Because, yeah, you have so many people who are really enthusiastic about it and really just use it as a way to engage with the great outdoors, you know?
And I would say that those percentages are probably very similar with RVing, because Mark, you got into RVing.
Right.
Fishing was also had a huge boost. Anything outside is awesome. If you can put your phone down and, you know, do something besides, you know, sit on your screen, it's going to be a lot healthier. Plus, I just learned from my doctor that vitamin D is one of the most important things we can get. Now the weather has broke, we can get all that you want. So.
Yeah. And yeah, it is just interesting, like all of the different activities that have become more popular because of the pandemic. Like I know that poker got bigger and so did chess.
Oh yeah.
And those are for slightly different reasons, I guess, because I think it normalized the pandemic and staying inside normalized like watching things on Twitch.
Right.
But yeah, I do have to say, one thing that I'm not super into in the golf world is they have these, I forget the name of the brand, but they have these things that you screw into the grips of your clubs that track how far you hit it, and you measure that with your phone. And so, yeah, I am against the further technologization of golf.
Yeah.
You heard it here first.
Well, I can appreciate that. The point is, we all know somebody that takes it too seriously, right? I mean, you can take golf too far and want to break your club over your knee when you duff that shot, or you can take basketball or shooting or whatever it is. Great point, though, that it is something that can relax you, and people need to get their mind off something. The book is called How Golf Can Save Your Life. Drew Millard is the author of it. You know, I think, Drew, that you first came to my attention with your article in Penthouse magazine, because I only ever bought Penthouse for the articles.
Oh, he's here all week. Don't forget to try the veal.
That's what he told people.
Well, thank you. Yeah, I think they put in my bio that I was Penthouse's golf correspondent or something, which is technically true, but only because I'm pretty sure that Penthouse has only run one article about golf ever, and it was by me.
That's the only one I read in there, I think. Yes.
Yeah, that's it's the only article you've read. What a pig.
That's great. Drew, where can people get the – is the book out there? Is it on Amazon, available on Amazon? Where do you go to get a copy of it?
Yes, the book is on Amazon. You can also go to bookshop.org and order it, and – I don't have the exact numbers, but I know it's in a fair amount of Barnes and Nobles throughout the nation. And, you know, if you really want to, you know, do the local community a solid, I recommend going to your local independent bookstore, seeing if they have it there. And if they don't, ask them to order it.
Outstanding.
For the record, Mark, I only was exposed to Drew and his authorship through GQ, but of course you can tell that by looking at the clothes I wear.
That's great.
I do want to mention, though, that you say that you could beat Donald Trump in a one-on-one match. Explain before we hang up.
Oh, he fudges things. He's a big cheater. If you have like a golf referee there, his entire game falls apart.
Really? Wow. Have you seen him play? Have you
That's
seen
like
him play
most
or
of
no?
Us, though.
I have watched him play.
Yeah.
And he does a very funny thing where he drives his golf cart onto the green, which is like not a thing you're supposed to do.
Yeah, but he owns it. Well, it's his. Yeah, he owns the green.
Fair enough.
That's great.
Oh, my God. Drew, listen, thanks for giving us some time today, and I hope people pick up a copy of How Golf Can Save Your Life.
Thank you so much for having me on. Had a great time.
Absolutely. Good to get
good luck, Drew.
That's fun. Great. That's good stuff. So he thinks Donald Trump cheats at golf.
Please, like the rest of us.
I should have asked him what he thought about the 2020 election, but I missed my opportunity there.
Yeah, you sure did. Yeah, you sure did. All right. Well, if you are excited when you hear the term dinosaurs, well, we have an opportunity to talk with Ron Geisler of Adventure 360 about a pretty cool thing. They go out west every year to search for artifacts and fossils. Well, we're going to talk to him next on Second Amendment Radio and the Great Outdoors. Stay right there. We'll be right back.
Second Amendment Radio in the Great Outdoors. You will recognize that theme song from Jurassic Park. Remember that? I'm telling you what, now I'm a proud grandfather now. My grandson, Beau, is going to be 2 years old on Tuesday.
Nice.
And the chief fan of Dinothor, as he pronounces it, in the world, is my grandson, Ashton. He eats, breathes, and thinks about dinosaurs. If he's awake, he's got dinosaur shirt on. He loves dinosaurs. There's no doubt
about
it.
I think the interest is built into us in our caveman brain. Yeah. No, seriously, because it seems like, you know, young kids especially, you know, fresh from the womb, they want to, and they could probably tell you all the different names of the dinosaurs and all that stuff. So say it correctly. I just think it's part of our caveman brain that really is intriguing, and why a movie like Jurassic Park and all these sequels are so successful, because, you know, we want to see that stuff.
Yeah.
And some say they still exist. Who knows?
That could be. Well, one person who could tell us that is Ron Giesler, joining us from Adventure 360. They got a great program coming up, including a paleontologist and fossils and everything, talking about dinosaurs and
Dinothorth
and kind of comparing how they were portrayed in Jurassic Park. Ron, welcome to the show.
Hey, good morning. How are you guys?
We're doing great, thank you. I you know, I'm sure as a kid I probably studied dinosaurs a little more. I don't think I was ever as passionate about it as my grandson is. But what was it, Jurassic Park, do you think, that really spurred people's interest in dinosaurs again?
It really did. I was at St. Louis Science Center at that time, and we had the animatronic dinosaurs that moved and really got kids excited and people excited. But once that movie came out with the computer graphics and the accuracy, or at least at the time, the accuracy of how scientists thought dinosaurs moved or ate or behaved, really, really charged the country. And it's still going on.
It is. It is. I love it. Matter of fact, Ron is from a group called Adventure 360. And in the summertime, they go out west. Heck, they probably pass you up or meet you at the truck stop, Mark, on your westward expansion travel with your RV. Ron, tell us about the program for Adventure 360 before we get into truths and fallacies of Jurassic Park.
Okay, yeah. Every summer we run a program, or several programs, out in Montana. We do a week for adults. And we do a week with families, and then several weeks with high school and college kids. And it's really to get everybody out into the field, show them what it's like to find a real dinosaur fossil, and teach them what to do when you do find one. Because we do work with a lot of scientific researchers, a lot of paleontologists. And so when we find a fossil, we have to collect it a certain way so they can do research on them.
Yeah.
And are you full this year for the summer?
We're getting there. We're pretty close. The field schools are filling up pretty well. We have actually a big group from Southeast Missouri State coming, and big group from down in Florida. And then we have another week where there's groups from Central Missouri, but there's still space. The adult week, there's still a couple spots if anybody's interested. Family week, though, as you said, with the kids, that one has really filled up.
Yeah, I'll bet it does. So are you going, is it like, you know, one of these places where you can go pan for gold? You might find something or you might not. Or are you going to places where you already know there are digs going on and you're pretty confident you're actually discovering something?
Yeah, where we go, we have our own excavations. So at the very least, we'll have fossils that people can work on excavation sites. But also where we go, we're out there a couple weeks ahead of time. So when I'm walking around and I'm looking up and down these coulees or canyons, and I notice something and I know I can get kids there fairly quickly and fairly easily without wearing them out, I'd move them into that area and let them see what they can find. So it's not a hit or miss. They're definitely going to find stuff. They're definitely going to have something to work on. And they're definitely going to be able to identify a fossil from a rock before the end of the day. It's really that easy.
And Ron Giesler of Adventure 360, I have to know, does anybody else work this same area, or do you own this property where these fossils are found?
No, we work on state and federal land. We work on BLM, Bureau of Land Management land, and state of Montana, so we have to get certain permits. Other paleontology groups, universities from all over the world actually are in the general area, but we're talking millions of acres.
Yeah.
And so we coordinate. I know who's going to be in the general area and about when. They know where we're going to be about when. So we do work to stay out of each other's way.
Yeah, I'll bet. So I know you've got an event coming up next weekend, I believe, at the Eureka Fire District Training Center with Adventure 360. What's that all about?
Well, that actually stemmed from an event we did in Steelville, Missouri, where we were doing some stuff with the community and with the school, and we had a paleontologist come in and in the evening and talking about the truths and fallacies of Jurassic Park. And Dr. Mike Morales, a good friend of mine, I've known him for about 20, 25 years now. And so the fire chief there in Eureka said, hey, let's do this in Eureka. And he said, we got a perfect place for it. And so we've just been coordinating ever since. We're going to try to get as many of our fossils that we found, that we've collected there so people can see them. And some of them they can actually help what we call clean, but actually help get the dirt and rock off of it. Help try to put some of the pieces together.
Yeah.
And then the other fossils, you know, you can touch. The stuff that we have are education fossils, so it's okay if people touch them. And that's so we're going to have a pretty good collection there for them.
Ron, when you came up with the title Truth and Fallacies of Jurassic Park, of course, you want to deliver on the day of the event, which is Saturday, May 27th. But can you give us a teaser for the listeners that are listening right now to Second Amendment Radio on the Great Outdoors? Just a teaser of what you're going to be talking about. Give us a fallacy, please.
Oh, some of the fallacies. Well, the one that the Dilophosaurus that spits. Had it spitting out some kind of poison.
Yeah.
In the face of the one guy. Spit doesn't fossilize very well. and there's no evidence with the animal, any of the fossil skull pieces, that says that they would actually have projected anything along those lines. It was a it added to the story a lot, but there's no real
movie
scientific
trick.
Evidence.
That's the scene where Newman from Seinfeld gets out of the truck and they surround him and they spit that poison on him and blinds him and then they eat him, right?
Yeah.
Yeah
that's so. That scene. The other big one, which I hate to give this one away, but probably most people know it by now, is you know the raptors, the velociraptors they had is between 6 and 7 foot tall, right?
Yeah.
Velociraptors were really about the size of a turkey.
No.
Yeah, Spielberg liked the name Velociraptor. It sounds great on a movie on the big screen, but the animal itself, you know, would have done some damage to your legs and kneecaps probably. But wasn't quite the 7 foot animal that he portrayed. So, but actually, a few years after Jurassic Park, they found a raptor in Utah that was about 7 foot. So it's kind of like he was predicting.
Yeah.
They were
fun. Yeah. So something could. I was corrected the other day by my almost 2-year-old because we got out one of his dinosaurs and I asked him if that was a T-Rex and he told me it was a raptor because he could tell from the little claw hook on the feet that it was a velociraptor. He knew that already. The kid's not even. He's a genius. Takes after his grandpa, clearly.
Yeah.
I'm just kidding. So I have to ask this, Ron. Speaking of people, you know, maybe either misportraying or not fully understanding what dinosaurs actually looked like. I started to watch a series on Apple TV this past week. Sir Richard Attenborough is the one who is basically the host of this show. I think he's going to be 90 years old now, and they've used computer graphics to generate what the world really looked like and what these dinosaurs were, and it honestly a couple of the portrayals looked more like large birds. I didn't expect to see feathers on some of these dinosaurs and because they're just not the way they've always been portrayed.
Hey, Ron, can you give us an idea of what creatures walk the earth now and, you know, that people may know that were alive when the dinosaurs were roaming the earth?
Oh, well, there's quite a few, actually. People from around Missouri would be familiar with the gar, the alligator gar in our rivers and long-nosed and short-nosed gars. And we find gar scales all the time with dinosaurs. We find soft shell turtles, much like what we have today. Crocodiles. We find a lot of evidence of crocodiles that wouldn't have been the great big ones you always hear about from Africa. These would have been, you know, normal size, probably 6 foot-ish or so.
Second Amendment Radio in the Great Outdoors. You will recognize that theme song from Jurassic Park. Remember that? I'm telling you what, now I'm a proud grandfather now. My grandson, Bo, is going to be 2 years old on Tuesday.
Nice.
And the chief fan of Dinothor, as he pronounces it in the world, is my grandson, Ashton. He eats, breathes, and thinks about dinosaurs. If he's awake, he's got dinosaur shirt on. He loves dinosaurs. There's no doubt about
it. I think the interest is built into us in our caveman brain.
Yeah.
No, seriously, because it seems like, you know, young kids especially, you know, fresh from the womb, they want to, and they can probably tell you all the different names of the dinosaurs and all that stuff. So say it correctly.
Stegosaurus.
I just think it's part of our caveman brain that really is intriguing, and why a movie like Jurassic Park and all these sequels are so successful, because, you know, we want to see that stuff.
Yeah.
And some say they still exist. Who knows?
That could be. Well, one person who could tell us that is Ron Giesler, joining us from Adventure 360. They got a great program coming up, including a paleontologist and fossils and everything, talking about dinosaurs and
Dinothor,
and kind of comparing how they were portrayed in Jurassic Park. Ron, welcome to the show.
Hey, good morning. How are you guys?
We're doing great, thank you. I you know, I'm sure as a kid I probably studied dinosaurs a little more. I don't think I was ever as passionate about it as my grandson is. But what was it, Jurassic Park, do you think, that really spurred people's interest in dinosaurs again?
It really did. I was at the St. Louis Science Center at that time, and we had the animatronic dinosaurs that moved and really got kids excited and people excited. But once that movie came out with the computer graphics and the accuracy, or at least at the time, the accuracy of how scientists thought dinosaurs moved or ate or behaved, really, really charged the country. And it's still going on.
It is. It is. I love it. Matter of fact, Ron is from a group called Adventure 360. And in the summertime, they go out west. Heck, they probably pass you up or meet you at the truck stop, Mark, on your westward expansion travel with your RV. Ron, tell us about the program for Adventure 360 before we get into truths and fallacies of Jurassic Park.
Okay, yeah. Every summer we run a program, or several programs, out in Montana. We do a week for adults. And we do a week with families, and then several weeks with high school and college kids. And it's really to get everybody out into the field, show them what it's like to find a real dinosaur fossil, and teach them what to do when you do find one. Because we do work with a lot of scientific researchers, a lot of paleontologists. And so when we find a fossil, we have to collect it a certain way so they can do research on them.
Yeah.
And are you full this year for the summer?
We're getting there. We're pretty close. The field schools are filling up pretty well. We have actually a big group from Southeast Missouri State coming, and big group from down in Florida. And then we have another group, another week, where there's groups from Central Missouri, but there's still space. The adult week, there's still a couple spots if anybody's interested. Family week, though, as you said, with the kids, that one has really filled up.
Yeah, I'll bet it does. So are you going, is it like, you know, one of these places where you can go pan for gold? You might find something or you might not. Or are you going to places where you already know there are digs going on and you're pretty confident you're actually discovering something?
Yeah, where we go, we have our own excavations. So at the very least, we'll have fossils that people can work on excavation sites. But also where we go, we're out there a couple weeks ahead of time. So when I'm walking around and I'm looking up and down these coulees and canyons, and I notice something and I know I can get kids there fairly quickly and fairly easily without wearing them out, I move them into that area and let them see what they can find. So it's not a hit or miss. They're definitely going to find stuff. They're definitely going to have something to work on, and they're definitely going to be able to identify a fossil from a rock before the end of the day. It's really that easy.
And Ron Geisler of Adventure 360, I have to know, does anybody else work this same area, or do you own this property where these fossils are found?
No, we work on state and federal land. We work on BLM, Bureau of Land Management land, and state of Montana, so we have to get certain permits. Other paleontology groups, universities from all over the world actually are in the general area, but we're talking millions of acres.
Yeah.
And so we coordinate. I know who's going to be in the general area and about when. They know where we're going to be about when. So we do work to stay out of each other's way.
Yeah, I'll bet. So I know you've got an event coming up next weekend, I believe, at the Eureka Fire District Training Center with Adventure 360. What's that all about?
Well, that actually stemmed from an event we did in Steelville, Missouri, where we were doing some stuff with the community and with the school, and we had a paleontologist come in in the evening and talking about the truths and fallacies of Jurassic Park. And Dr. Mike Morales, a good friend of mine, I've known him for about 20, 25 years now. And so the fire chief there in Eureka said, hey, let's do this in Eureka. And he said, we got a perfect place for it. And so we've just been coordinating ever since. We're going to try to get as many of our fossils that we found, that we've collected, there so people can see them. And some of them, they can actually help what we call clean, but actually help get the dirt and rock off of it, help try to put some of the pieces together.
Yeah.
And then the other fossils, you know, you can touch. The stuff that we have are education fossils, so it's okay if people touch them. And so we're going to have a pretty good collection there for them.
Ron, when you came up with the title "Truth and Fallacies of Jurassic Park," of course you want to deliver on the day of the event, which is Saturday, May 27th. But can you give us a teaser for the listeners that are listening right now to Second Amendment Radio on the Great Outdoors? Just a teaser of what you're going to be talking about. Give us a fallacy, please.
Oh, some of the fallacies. Well, the one that the Dilophosaurus that spits. Had it spitting out some kind of poison.
Yeah.
In the face of the one guy. Spit doesn't fossilize very well. and there's no evidence with the animal, any of the fossil skull pieces, that says that they would actually have projected anything along those lines. It was a nice, it added to the story a lot, but there's no
real
scientific
trick.
Evidence.
That's the scene where Newman from Seinfeld gets out of the truck and they surround him and they spit that poison on him and blinds him and then they eat him, right?
Yeah.
Yeah
that's that scene. The other big one, which I hate to give this one away, but probably most people know it by now, is, you know, the raptors, the velociraptors they had is between 6 and 7 foot tall, right?
Yeah.
Velociraptors were really about the size of a turkey.
No.
Yeah, Spielberg liked the name Velociraptor. It sounds great on a movie, on the big screen, but the animal itself, you know, would have done some damage to your legs and kneecaps, probably. Wasn't quite the 7 foot animal that he portrayed. But actually, a few years after Jurassic Park, they found a raptor in Utah that was about 7 foot. So it's kind of like he was predicting.
Yeah.
Yeah.
So something could. I was corrected the other day by my almost 2-year-old because we got out one of his dinosaurs and I asked him if that was a T-Rex and he told me it was a raptor because he could tell from the little claw hook on the feet that it was a velociraptor. He knew that already. The kid's not even. He's yep. A genius. Takes after his grandpa, clearly. Yeah. I'm just kidding. So I have to ask this, Ron. Speaking of people, maybe either misportraying or not fully understanding what dinosaurs actually looked like. I started to watch a series on Apple TV this past week. Sir Richard Attenborough is the one who is basically the host of this show. I think he's mm-hmm. gonna be 90 years old now, and yeah. they've used computer graphics to generate what what the world really looked like and what these dinosaurs were. And it honestly, a couple of the portrayals looked more like large birds. I didn't expect to see feathers on some of these dinosaurs, and because they're just not the way they've always been portrayed.
Hey, Ron, can you give us an idea of what creatures walk the earth now, and you know that people may know that were alive when the dinosaurs were roaming the earth?
Oh, well, there's quite a few, actually. People from around Missouri would be familiar with the gar, the alligator gar in our rivers, and the long-nosed and short-nosed gars. And we find gar scales all the time with dinosaurs. We find soft-shell turtles, much like what we have today. Crocodiles. We find a lot of evidence of crocodiles that wouldn't have been the great big ones you always hear about from Africa. These would have been, you know, normal size, probably 6 foot-ish or so.
Wow.
Fish, they were, you know, not bass like we have today, but we find a lot of fish scales and other evidence of fish, vertebrae and such.
How exciting.
And of course, the birds that are still around.
So, Ron, what is the age range of people who would that you're looking for your training you're going to do in Eureka next weekend?
Oh, well, before it starts at 6 o'clock, so we'll have all the fossils on display out there where people can come in. We're looking, you know, anybody that's interested, and even if you don't want to stay and see the or hear the talk, you can come in and still look at the fossils and handle the fossils and talk to us about fossils. We get people, we've done this kind of stuff in libraries, and we get families with kids who are like your grandson, 3 or 4 or 5 years old and up. We get a lot of retired people who are kind of, I always call them closet paleontologists. They always were interested, but they had a different career.
Yeah.
And they want to come and talk to us about paleontology, maybe even join us out in Montana. We've had people in their 80s. So basically from 4 to 5 up.
Oh,
and
wow.
We can discuss it with, you know, basically on any level with them.
So can people find details at adventure-360.org?
Yes.
Okay. Adventure-360.org is the address there. And Ron Giesler, thank you so much for your time.
Mark wants to know if you can bring a 2-year-old.
Well, actually, if they're going to come on in. I don't know how long he'd be interested in the talk, but absolutely with the fossils.
Short attention span. His bedtime is 7, so I won't have a lot of time. So,
well, that's cool. Your special guest, paleontologist Dr. Mike Morales. You can see, you can hold, you can even help work on the real dinosaur fossils. Ron, always great to have you on our show, Second Amendment Radio on the Great Outdoors. We do appreciate your time.
I appreciate you guys having me here.
Absolutely. All right. Take care of yourself, Ron. Appreciate that. That's
all
good
right.
stuff.
Before the show ends, I have to, before we get letters or tweets or whatever.
What?
David Attenborough was the host that you saw on Apple Plus. He's 97 years old. Richard Attenborough was in Jurassic Park, and he died in 2014.
Okay, so I had the names mixed up. It was David Attenborough.
David Attenborough is the British host that does all the nature shows.
Of the documentary,
shows.
Okay,
yes.
All right.
He's 97, but Richard Attenborough was in Jurassic Park. He was Hammond.
Oh, he was the old, okay, yeah.
Were they related or no?
Now you gotta ask me that.
I don't know if they were or not. They kind of looked alike.
Yes, they were brothers.
Okay, all right. So
really?
I
see,
yeah, brothers.
I'm off by a little bit of DNA. I'm sorry
Dang,
about that.
Good
no,
question.
So close,
okay.
though. I know. So.
Well, that's going to be a good event for people that are not going out of town for Memorial Day weekend, and so I'm glad we had Ron on. Ron's very passionate. Alan Westfall's a partner of him, of his with Adventure 360. I just saw Alan not long ago, actually. Good people, and they're interesting, and like I said, it's something else to do if you're in town for Memorial Day weekend.
You know, if you love dinosaurs, there's another event coming up at the St. Charles Family Arena. Carl, maybe that's a good future guest for Second Amendment Radio in the Great Outdoors.
I have been talking to someone about that.
Nice. It's a Jurassic Park type thing where they you can go walk through the displays and all that out at the Family Arena coming up in June. Yeah, we'll get them on here to talk about it. That's
so animatronic kind of thing.
I think so.
Yeah. Oh, cool.
I can't wait to get my grandson over there for sure.
All righty then. Well, that is going to wrap it up for Second Amendment Radio and the Great Outdoors. Got a lot of great outdoor stuff in this show. Please share this show as a podcast at the Odyssey app. You can download that for free onto your phone. Have a great rest of your weekend,
yeah,
buddy.
Yeah, you too. We'll see you, boys.
See you, boys.
Pew, pew.
Get more at 971talk.com.